All right, guys, we're really excited today for this episode of the SPP. We're actually going to be having our first guest on today. Today's guest is Zach Gully. Zach is the director of golf fitness at Superstition Mountain Golf and Country Club. Zach graduated from Arizona State University with a degree in exercise science and wellness and is certified through the Titleist Performance Institute as a level three fitness professional. Zach works in his capacity at the Country Club in developing and leading group and private golf specific fitness classes. In addition to this, Zach is also the golf performance coach for numerous LPGA players, including players ranked in the top 10 nationally. So he's having a chance to work with the elite of the elite, the highest level golfers in the world. And part of the reason we wanted to bring him on today is Zach specializes in improving physical capacities, and he's created some absolutely amazing results, tremendous results with high level players in terms of improving their club head speed and their driving distance. Zach also has a bit of a physical therapy background as well. So he's someone who understands golf at a really high level, understands the human body and how it works at a really high level, and is doing some really unique and innovative things, specifically with power training and developing rotational power. As someone who comes from a rotational sport background, baseball, I really think that some of the things Zach is doing and some of his concepts that we'll get into the show today behind, one, assessing some of the closed chain function of the pelvis, but also then what do you do with that information and how you could use different med ball throws or plyometrics in a more specific manner to align with the golf swing and specifically how the body produces force in a rotary capacity. Guys, I'm super excited about this. I really think, like, if you are someone that wants to understand movement better, and definitely if you're someone that if you works with anyone who needs to produce power while rotating, I think you're going to get a lot out of this. So, without further ado, let's bring them in. All right, guys. So we're here today with special guest Zach Gully on the SPP. Zach, what's up, man? How you doing?
Great. It's good to be in the dojo today.
Hell yeah, man. We're in the dojo. Liam's also here.
Hey guys. Hi.
So, that's a bummer, but he's here and he won't leave, so we're just gonna have to work with it. So yeah, like you guys heard in the intro, Zach is someone who works with a ton of golfers, and what I think is really cool about it, and he's gonna offer some cool perspective today, is he's working with golfers along the whole range of the continuum. So everything from a 75-year-old female who just wants to keep feeling good and being able to play high school athletes that are really developing, and professional players who are at the top of their game, who have like really extensive background in training and have really, really high level skill levels. So yeah, Zach, why don't you tell us kind of how did you get into like golf fitness and performance?
So I had my start. I was going to school and I was thinking I was going to pursue a physical therapy career, and I kind of had changed my mindset into doing more like a wellness type gig where I could try to keep people out of physical therapy or help them bounce back from a physical therapy program that they would be going through. And while I was doing that, I was working in a commercial gym setting where a lot of trainers make their start, and it was a tough grind. It was always more about trying to find the next client, how do you keep them engaged? And it just wasn't a place that I saw my future being in. So I tried to think about being a trainer a little bit backwards. I wanted to find a population that could work out in the middle of the day so I could work a normal life, and find a population where I wasn't forced to sell so much. And it just kind of brought me to the game of golf being I could work at a country club, middle of the day, and just kind of do the same things I always loved, which was train. And it just happened that I came across the Titleist Performance Institute right as I was about to start making this move. And it really opened my eyes to things that I never really thought were important when training a rotational athlete, or how in depth their information was with either assessing a player or drawing comparisons between how a player moves physically and what type of golf swing that they can produce. So yeah, I went through the Titleist Performance Institute level one course, loved it, had some success with just some introduction courses at a club, and really soon after that I went through the fitness level 2 course, and then around that same time I started gaining traction at my club, and then I went out to Oceanside for the level 3 course, which if anyone gets a chance to go to the TPI headquarters, it's absolutely incredible. Like,
I've seen some pictures, it looks insane.
It's nuts. They've got all the 3D bays. I mean, their gym is really spectacular. They've got the robo ball launcher where they test all the balls at this facility. Jeez. Which is pretty cool to see. I forget the guy's name or the robot's name, but it's really neat. And then they have all the different putting surfaces, all the different chipping surfaces. So they have like every type of grass that all the tour players are going to play on at this place. And
that's unreal.
They may have a couple holes on this course. So it's a rather big facility, but if you guys get the chance to look up some of the TPI content, it's always pretty good from Greg Rose. So Greg Rose has been a big influence of mine of trying to understand where he's coming from. His background's a bit different. He's a chiropractor and biomechanics, I believe. So he's really, really at a high level, but yeah, I tried to take in as much knowledge as I can from him whenever it's put out there.
Where do they go with what does level 2 and level 3 cover? Just like from a 30,000 foot view.
It covers,
because level 1 is the basic assessment, right? Yeah, the screening process and some of the swing characteristics. Yeah, right?
And the issue I see with level 1 is it's a really broad screening process that you don't really know what to do with. Like, you get the information, and it's made so that a medical pro can take somebody through the same screening that a golf pro and a fitness pro would, but then what do you do? So that's where things start becoming a little bit more diluted, and I feel like coaches have to use their skill set that they may already currently possess or resource out the other pros that are needed.
Do they get into more of the, like, corrective exercise or movements, or basically what you would do in level 2?
Level 2, yes. Yeah, you start with more how they would regress all the corrective exercises. Okay. So they call it the 4x4 matrix. And
that's like the positions, right? It's like,
that's positions, okay. Yeah. So everything starts supine, goes to prone, goes to half kneeling, goes to split stance, and then it progresses up into tall, and then to single leg. So that's kind of the method that they would use for all exercises. But TPI's whole corrective format, or their advice, is to do corrective exercises with stability always first, and then start taking that away. So that's when you would progress through those different series.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes sense.
They go through some power stuff, though, too. Just power application, which if you went through college, some of that stuff, or if you went through the CSCS, you're going to have a lot more knowledge on ways or principles to produce power. They're short segments, but I think it is great to just kind of dip your toes in with that type of stuff, the power.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a quick note, too, for anyone who's not familiar with what we're talking about, the Titleist Performance Institute is basically, so Titleist, the golf company, that's their whole wing developed for like golf health and performance, basically all things making golfers kind of more powerful, helping them stay healthy, all that. So the courses that Zach's talking about, I've had the chance to do TPI level 1, and basically it's a super cool concept and something that I think, like, and I know they've expanded it into other sports since then. I think they have baseball and maybe tennis now too.
Yeah, tennis also.
Okay. But basically you're taking an athlete or a client or a patient, whomever, through a screening process. So like some physical assessment, which is cool. And I think most, any good coach or trainer or therapist, anyone like that has some sort of screening or assessment process they're using. Where I think the TPI stuff is really cool is they've actually taken those. So physical characteristics or things you might find with the screening process, and then correlated that with swing characteristics. So things you might see tendencies or traits or characteristics you might see during a golf swing. So, you know, they have an assessment for hip internal rotation, but then they've also tied it to the next level of like why a deficit in hip internal rotation might lead to over the top or sway or whatever. And I don't know too much about that stuff. Zach would be the guy to talk to with that. But Zach, why don't you kind of get into a little bit, what are some of the things, because I know like we've talked about this off camera before, but you have a pretty cool little assessment process that you like to use with your clients to take them through. Can you just give us kind of a general overview of that and maybe some of your thoughts behind it?
Yeah, so I will take somebody through the TPI screen, but before I do, I ask them if they have obviously pains, things that past injuries and all that kind of stuff, but ask them if they have any recorded videos of their swing so that I can see what their swing looks like prior to start. And then ask them if they've been working with a professional for lessons and ask them what kind of things they're working on. Cause that can give me some insight right away as to where I need to go with the screening process, but I'll take somebody through the full TPI screen. And if you're not familiar with that, maybe we post a picture at the bottom of this podcast that just has a copy of the screen. Because what you're going to go through is pelvic tilting ability, torso rotation ability, pelvic rotation ability. We're going to look at overhead deep squat or deep squat. We're going to look at torso rotation in a seated position. We're going to look at overhead range of motion. We're going to look at shoulder internal and external rotation, hip internal and external rotation. We're going to look at supine bridging for some glute strength. We're going to go through cervical rotation and then some forearm stuff. And I don't do a whole lot with the forearm stuff. I feel like that's a hard one for me to like manipulate with people other than just some basic stretches that I know. But if somebody comes to me and right away they're telling me they have forearms issues, I immediately start going back to look at their swing. And that's a whole other thing we can talk about. Because a lot of that stuff comes from sequencing as opposed to physical limitations that they may or may not have in their hands. But the screening process, so it's just for an example, like take somebody through the screen. All these screens, they're done in two positions, or I try to look at them in two positions. One is going to be like a standing position that's easiest for them, and then one is going to be in a position that they're going to be in their golf swing, so more or less in a golf posture. Mm-hmm. And if I find something that's tricky in golf posture that they can't do that I think is not a physical barrier, I'm going to try to take them into other positions and see if they can do that. So I'm going to regress those positions down to on their backs, test it passive, test it active, take them into half kneeling if it's a hip type thing, and go through the same type of more or less just watching. I got to remember that I'm not a physical therapist, so I can't use it, or I shouldn't use a goniometer. Like I don't really know what I'm looking at when I'm doing that kind of stuff. So it's all based on just watching a player move. Like if they can show me that they can do something in a regressed position, then I assume that maybe we just need to work on some like motor pattern stuff in another position or address the muscles that are stabilizing that specific range up in what is most important golf posture for them.
That's a huge concept, right? So just to kind of reiterate, what Zach's saying is basically he'll look at something like, let's say, shoulder external rotation in a golf posture. If they can't do it there, then he'll regress them out of the golf posture to a more basic posture. If the patient or client has the ability to demonstrate adequate, let's say, external rotation, then in that position, immediately he's kind of thinking that this isn't just a like physical roadblock. There may be like a motor program, or like maybe there's a stability issue or something like that in there. And I think this is huge too. I know Dr. Josh Heenan up in Connecticut, I think, talks a lot about this with throwers. So that's a big tidbit, I think, for any therapists or coaches out there, making sure that you assess in a variety of postures and not assuming just because someone can't do something in one position that they can't do it in another, Or I think the tendency right away is to try to stretch things or mobilize things. And it's not always maybe a mobility or a flexibility issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, in the screening process, just like Hyman talked about with the shoulder, the reason why we go through that stuff and the reason why we have video of the swing is because if we see that limitation in golf position, and we go look at their swing and we notice that they are like chicken winging at the top of their swing, that's going to be the reason why. We know that now they don't have the ability to externally rotate their arm at the top, which could lead to less T-spine rotation at the top of their swing, which could lead to a path that comes from out to in. So it's a whole slew of different possibilities that happens with the golf swing. And I've been thankful to kind of get a lot more insight into the golf swing from golf coaches that I've worked with around the valley here and at Superstition. So it's opened my eyes a bit to what a good golf swing should be, and not just from a fitness component of like, hey, like, okay, we know that you need stable lower body and to rotate your torso and then everything should be good. There's so much more to it. And I think there's different ways that as a golf coach, you look at it. Like, do they rotate their body well, or do they manipulate the club with their hands well? So I think for me, that's been a good place to operate from, because I've tried to learn so much about the swing that I can start to loosely use those movements in my training. And we'll kind of get into my methods on that here in a little bit.
That's huge, guys. I think that's something I've been kind of thinking. There's this trend within like the fitness, and I see it a lot in strength and conditioning, to focus on like strength coaches or performance coaches being generalists, which I agree with, right? At its core, our job is to improve people's physical capacity, not necessarily their sports skill. But if you're working with a specific population, having at least like a very basic understanding of those sports skills is going to take your understanding of the biomechanics and the movements or whatever you're trying to do from a fitness or physical capacity. That just makes it like, it enhances it so much. Like, I've seen the same thing with baseball. Like, that's a sport I understand pretty well, like a lot of the patterns and movements. When you understand it like from the sport perspective, it really kind of allows you to get more creative and really see like transfer between different movements or positions. The other thing too that I think is like super underrated with that is it's an awesome way to build buy-in with the patient or the client. If you can, because they don't care about their vertical jump or how hard they throw a med ball or anything like that, right? They're there to be better at their sport or get healthy so they can do their sport. So if you can put things in those terms, you're going to get a lot better buy-in. And I think like one thing that Zach just mentioned that I think is a huge tip for everyone out there is like getting with the skill coach or the sport coach or spending some time with them so you can start to see where their mind is at. It's going to help you in terms of like your line of communication and being able to work with it, but also give you just a little bit different perspective. I think like one of the biggest things I've learned over the past couple of years is like, it's so beneficial to see things from different perspectives. We constantly are looking at, it's like you have a globe or something, some three-dimensional object, and you're only looking at it from one angle. And you can get, I think it's important to dive deep and be really, really good at seeing what you can see. But sometimes all you need to do is walk halfway around there a little bit and look at it from the other side, and you're going to get new insights that that maybe you couldn't see from before. You just weren't aware of. So that's a really good point. Real quick, I wanted to hammer. What are, with just like the basic TPI screen, Zach, are there any common, like, what are the most common areas where people struggle, or the most common deficiencies, or are there any like that you see more often than others?
Oh, for sure. There's a lot that are really common, but I think we need to talk more about the type of person that we're generalizing right now, because that's going to be different person to person. Like, say a female, they could pass every single TPI screen, no issues, no limitations, but still have pain in their back or something when they play, or in their hip, but their screening could be flawless. Whereas some guys, they could fail like pelvic tilt test, they could fail torso rotation test, pelvic rotate, like they might not be able to separate their lower body from their upper body at all, but they can go out and shoot even par every time. So I think we just got to think about the populations. But if we were going to just talk general, amateur golfers, TPI, they have all the data from thousands of tests on what players show compared to tour players. And if we're going to just look at, say, pelvic tilt and ability to control pelvic tilt, we'll just use this as a loose term. Amateurs, only 35% of them have full range or normal range of pelvic tilt, and only 28% of them can do it with smooth movement. Compared to tour pros, 61% normal range and 75% smooth movement. So if that gives you any indication, there's a big separation in all of these tests between an amateur player and a tour level player on most of the screens. But the thing that I see most, all the strength coaches know, we got upper cross syndrome and lower cross syndrome. Both of those like are in everything. So the upper cross syndrome is going to affect T-spine rotation. It's going to affect shoulder mobility. It could affect neck range motion. And lower cross, you're going to see S posture all day long, anterior tilt with the pelvis. Probably not going to see great squatting patterns. And both of those are going to affect internal rotation with your hips. So you could see people that fail the lower quarter rotation all day long too. So I think that one, you're going to see what you see kind of across the board when you walk out in public. Because golfers, a lot of them are just average shows that are just going through their days. So you're going to see those two things all day long. Yeah, with high-level golfers, it's totally different. Or high school golfers, totally different. But just a general population, which is the majority of the population for golf, that's what you're going to see.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One thing I wanted to, let's get into, so you've taken them through the base level screening. We had a chance a couple weeks ago, you took us through some of the more, I guess, specific, like assessment, like it's kind of a blend between assessment and then training, of kind of that function of the pelvis and how you're moving the hips, how you're rotating there. Can you give us a little overview maybe of what that looks like for you and what are some of the things you're looking at?
Yeah, so let me just go kind of why I have developed this thought process. With working with high-level golfers, a few of them have come to me and have been some of the longest hitters on tour, yet have had no ability to dissociate their lower body from their upper body with solid control without like sway and slide or like butt wagging. And it's kind of produced a mindset for me where I need to focus on that the most, because that seems to be what creates the most amount of speed. When you look at some of the speed numbers from some of the best players in the world, like we'll say Rory, his hips move faster than everybody else and he swings the club really, really fast. So that, just understanding that, has made me shift my focus more on what are the hips doing? How do we free up the hips? How do we keep the pelvis more controlled? How do we get the pelvis moving back and left? Because if you're a golfer, you know that that's probably the most important motion in your swing, is how do we keep the hips from moving towards the ball? And I've tried to regress that position and teach players just what their pelvis is doing, how it rotates, and try to build awareness for them at which like tilt or degrees of like lateral flexion their pelvis is, anterior, posterior tilt. Just, I'm always talking about that with my players. So when I go to regress them, I'm taking them down onto their back, and I'm going to take them through sagittal plane type motions with their pelvis, and then we're going to go into half kneeling sagittal plane motions with their pelvis. We're going to try to do some frontal plane stuff in that position, transverse plane stuff in that position, and then I try to combine the different planes of motion. So we're going to go half kneeling with transverse plane and then some sagittal plane. So we're trying to rotate the pelvis what do we say, away from like a grounded leg and pelvic tilt at the same time, because both of those two things happen in the golf swing pretty close to impact, so that you can activate both of your glutes. And I feel like a lot of people don't have a concept of how you need to get into that position. And I think that one of the best places to start is in the half kneeling and then work up into split stance and try to work through that same type of motion where we are rotating the pelvis and posteriorly tilting the pelvis at the same time. And then what I try to do is work up to the feet and then try to replicate those same motions in a more powerful manner.
Yeah, no, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. So just to recap, when you're like, let's say if we're in that half kneeling position, we're starting sagittal plane. Basically we're doing anterior and posterior tilt.
Yeah.
Right. So like, and the whole time you're assessing like quantity and quality of the motion. Right. So
yeah. And, when they're in half kneeling, you're going to see some players, they can't go through that motion without side bending with their pelvis. Like, so they don't have control with their glutes, or something's going on with their lower back. That stuff is more for the physical therapist. But for me, I'm just looking at it like, can they do that? And if they can't, maybe we can just practice the motor control of that movement more. But yeah, sagittal plane, anterior posterior tilt. Because I mean, that should be an easier place to start.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And I forget who it was, but listening to a physical therapist talk one time, he said that if you want to improve mobility, just start with the most successful plane and then try to work from there. So if that successful plane for them is sagittal plane, then I'm going to try to do that and just build some awareness of it, especially if my concepts are all really, really new to a person who's never even tilted their pelvis at all. And in their golf swing, they've never even thought about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like, cause that's Liam, we went through this with Zach a couple weekends ago, and like, that was pretty eye-opening to see like how, just like how restricted we were in certain positions, or how like difficult it was to have like the motor control. What were your thoughts on kind of like a couple weekends ago when we went through some of these different positions?
Yeah. One, I know I'm pretty restricted in my hips, but, just the lack of like control I had with these movements too. And earlier when you said, so when you are swinging a golf, hitting a ball, you really, when you said you don't want your hips going towards the ball, it's just going forward. You really don't want too much forward hip movement. And man, I really have a tough time controlling that, just that rotating purely at the pelvis. It's a awkward movement for me.
So I think for me, like, one of the reasons I wanted to have Zach on the pod today is, I don't know very much about golf, but like, having worked in, with a lot of baseball players, like, to me, you have a lot of the same similarities, right? Like, if we were to look at the best hitters in Major League Baseball, my guess is, like, everyone wants to talk about the sexy things that are easy to see, right? Like, how big they are, how strong they are, how fast they run, how high they jump. But to me, what I've noticed is, like, the commonalities behind those guys, sure, all those things help, is, like, they're really skilled movers, and I think, like, they move from the middle, right? Like, their pelvis, they have really good control of their pelvis. So I really like what you're talking about, Zach, with just in terms of assessing that, because that's something that I don't know that too many people are really doing that and breaking it down and really seeing, like, one, can they do it? Two, like, what's the quality of that movement? So just for our listeners, I want to break it down a little bit further. So let's just stay in that half kneeling. We're assessing sagittal plane with anterior and posterior tilting, and we can look at both sides with that. Then we're going to go, you like to go frontal plane next, and I'm just basically doing like a little hip bump, shifting side to side. Right. And the whole time, like, I thought it was cool when you did this with me and Liam too, the whole time you're communicating and you're asking the player, like, what they're feeling, like, where, cause I know, like, Liam gave us some good feedback. I had some thoughts on it too. Like, there were certain, like, for me, shifting to my left in the frontal plane, like, I physically feel like I can't, like, get into that hip. So we did anterior posterior tilt. We did kind of hip bump side to side. And then for the transverse plane, basically, we're just, like, if you think about almost, like, turning the belly button. Like, you can turn it towards the knee that's up and then turning it away. Is that pretty fair breakdown?
Yeah. Think about it, like, relative rotation. Like, trying to turn away from the leg that's grounded. or turn towards the leg that's grounded.
Moving the pelvis over a fixed femur. Closed chain pelvic movement, which I think is like, if I was to summarize like in a little nutshell, like some of the things I've learned from you, I think like paying attention to and really assessing the closed chain movement of the pelvis. I've been delving deep kind of into the PRI realm of things a little bit lately, and that's something they talk about too. But if you look like in the physical therapy world, most of our assessments are all, they're all open chain assessments of the hip. And I think it's like, Liam, you can give us your thoughts on this too, but like, I think it's funny because we know like PTs are the first people to jump on like, well, we can't do leg extensions because it's open chain and we function closed chain. But then all the assessments for hip rotation, like I guess like some pelvic mobility is all open chain, which like I said, I don't know very much about golf, but I have yet to see a golfer swing where their feet are not on the ground. So they're going to be in closed chain. So like, what are your thoughts on that, Liam? Like, I think that's huge, assessing the closed chain function.
Yeah, it's so specific to the movement. Like, people are so good at compensating that it's just, you got to get them in the position that they're going to perform in to really get a good assessment on it. I think it's just fascinating being able to, like, feel, like, being able to feel your glutes move in these different directions. Like, you really just, you feel so much more power behind it. Like, that one day we went out there, we should post maybe some videos or something more just for
yeah, maybe we can put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, because they really, once you're able to feel these movements and because the glutes, we just think they always extend and extend, but once you can really get them to rotating, it's unbelievable how much more power you can tap into. So this stuff is awesome.
So maybe that's a good jumping off point, Zach, if we want to go there. You and I have talked a lot about jumping in the past, right? And
yeah,
like, and loading the glutes in kind of like a triplanar fashion, right? Because like, we know the glutes, like from an anatomical perspective, are going to extend, abduct, and externally rotate the hips. But I think so much of the training is centered around hip extension, and people focus on hip extension all the time, which is fine and is good, but you're kind of ignoring like a big portion of the glutes. What are your thoughts on that, Zach?
Yeah, so talking again about the demographic. If I got a high school player, I'm going to allow them to jump sagittal plane, like hip extension, much more than I would my tour pros. Or if I have an older, we'll say older lady, their jumping progression may not be them leaving the ground, but it's still power.
Yeah.
But with this rotary component, I think about what the right leg is supposed to do to create maximum amount of relative pelvic rotation speed. And if you guys were to lift your right leg up right now, and like if we're standing on your left, and you rotate your right leg out to the side and then fully extend your right leg back behind you, you know the motion that the glute max does? That's the type of feeling that I'm trying to get people to have in all of their rotational jumps. And I've kind of developed a progression of how I will take somebody through a jump. And if this is a high-level golfer, I'm going to do a lot of single leg stuff. I'm just trying to expose them to different ground pressures of how they actually have to turn their body from the floor. So what I generally go through is some loading mechanics in sagittal plane where you're throwing your hands straight to the ground. Then we go through some transverse plane loading mechanics where you're going to throw your hands down towards what would be your backswing. And then we're going to go into some vertical jumping. From that, we're going to go into some loaded rotational type jump, or I like to keep these ones more as a vertical jump, but not turn your body yet, but we're feeling loading into the right glute. So maybe we'll do like a little video on this. It's kind of hard for me to explain.
Yeah, we'll post guys, we'll post some videos in the show notes so you can see. It really is something that you got to kind of see. But what I wanted you guys to get from this for sure is like, just the thought process behind like why you might be doing some of this power work outside of kind of just that sagittal plane.
Yeah, and I am trying to, again, expose people to different motions that they haven't done before because the golf swing is so dynamic. So again, we're going from a high hand position up over your left shoulder. You're going to throw those hands down towards your right hip. we're going to try to work some upper body rotation over a fixed pelvis and go from vertical jumps from that position. So it's going to feel like you're jumping more off your right leg, which is awesome. And then from that, we start progressing more into the rotary type jump. So it's going to be the same type of loading pattern where you're throwing your hands in this oblique motion. And then we're jumping vertically as high as we can. But what this does that I've found, if we talked about some of the big common moves that you see golfers have, professional golfers, one is going to be that early extension, and one is going to be some sliding with the hips where the hips move laterally left and the hips don't rotate back and left. So this is crucial, I think, when we're talking about plyometrics, because it teaches us, one, how to use the right side, how to not load or rotate too far into the right side, but it also is going to give us insight as to what the left leg does in order to move your pelvis back and out of the way. And this is the thing that I, in the last 2 years, have found to be probably the most beneficial in terms of producing more power for a golfer, and it's how they're producing ground force with their left leg outside of their swing, because in their swing is such a high skill that they've done for so long that they may not be able to alter that. But if we can alter it outside of their swing, then it could potentially lead to some faster hip speeds. But this is something too, that if you're a strength coach, you need to understand that if your high level golfer is performing at a high level, you got to have a really open line of communication with them, because you giving them more hip speed could make them a worse golfer. Mm-hmm. So you need to talk with the coach, talk with the golfer, and make sure that this is something that's okay for you to tap into, because more speed doesn't mean better. Even though on the PGA Tour, the further you hit the ball, the more speed you have, the more money you make, the better of a player you are. That's proven now. That they know that for sure. So I have gotten into trying to figure out ways to produce more speed, and I think that left side is one of the crucial components. So again, we're loading, we're rotating up and we're turning, and then I progress them into like a lunge position and have them learn how to rotate and jump using both glutes the way that we talked about earlier, where they're feeling their right glute work as they jump. And then we're going to progress that into a single leg rotational type jump. And we're going to do all these, I don't know, just a few rounds of four or five or six. Like, it's not a lot of reps, but it's more about, can they do this motion and can they start to progress this? I don't really ever make my players do loaded jumps. I'm not super big, or I don't know all the science behind the different strength and conditioning components as to how to make somebody jump higher, but I'm just trying to make these people rotate and jump in positions that are more similar to their golf swing than just, can we make them jump 1 inch higher? And I don't know if I need to do more of that, but I think that it translates more into their swing than them just doing a saddle plane jump as high as they can.
Yeah, it's crazy how much I felt the glutes actually like getting fired up for doing these things. Like, I squat and deadlift a few times a week, but like having no resistance on my back, doing these rotational like lunge movements and hops, like my glutes were just on fire during this stuff. So it's there's some like the rotate, you just have to do these rotational movements if you really want to maximize the glutes. So
yeah, I got a lot of this is gonna need to be like a three part episode. I have like so many questions, ideas, but like just to back up real quick, like I think what you said, Zach, like makes total sense, because you're not pursuing like necessarily like these like weighted jumps and like maybe some of these different like different methods to improve vertical jump, because at the end of the day, like, it's about the ground reaction forces they use during their golf swing, right? And I think that's an important component to understand. The pattern of power production is specific to the movement that you're looking to do, right? So just because you can produce a really high wattage or super high power outputs doing a hang snatch or hang clean or a skater hop or a broad jump or any type of plyometric movement doesn't mean that the athlete's going to be able to transfer that over. And that's like, I really think for me, like my whole life, what I like, what I find really, really fascinating about this is the transfer. Like, and we've talked about this before, but like, there's so many, like I was a good example of this in baseball. Like I felt like I was pretty good at most like sagittal plane things, but couldn't get as much transfer to rotary power as I wanted necessarily. And I think that's where what I really like about what you've done is you've taken a concept that we know is effective, plyometrics and improving rate of force production, but you've made that pattern and the position and the, I guess, the motor program you use like specific to the golf swing. And that's, I keep referencing back to baseball, but I think that makes like, that makes so much sense to me and helps explain why you see, like golf's a perfect example. A guy like, what is it, Justin Rose, like he's like 150, 160 pounds, can hit the ball, I don't know what, 330 yards, like really far, right? Really far. Zach, you're a good example of this. Like Zach's not a huge guy. Zach, how tall are you? How much do you weigh?
5'7", 150. On a good day. Maybe if I bulk up, I could get to 155, but come on.
But, and it's crazy, like having golfed with Zach plenty of times, the dude can drive the ball, he can drive it a mile, even though he's not a big guy. And I think like one thing I've noticed about him, like he does create a lot of good, like he's pretty good with hip shoulder separation and tends to like rotate well. But I think he also has like really good, basically like motor control of his pelvis and is able to use those patterns more efficiently versus like someone like me, I probably have like, I have more size and strength, but I'm not able to convert that. And that really shows up with like a golf swing or maybe even a baseball swing. But I wanted to go back further, Zach, if you could just break us, let's stick with just the bilateral stance, rotational jump, and maybe walk me through like, so if I'm a right-handed golfer, I'm throwing my hands back to the outside of my right knee, kind of simulating that my like takeaway or some loading, right? And then I'm going to jump and I'm basically turning in the air. I could turn, say, 90 degrees, like a quarter turn.
Yeah, so you could go about this a couple ways. You could, and the way I start first is vertical as high as you can with rotation. So like maybe like a 90 degree turn. But as high as you can, and if, say, you've got your alignment rod and your target line is down the course, we're set up like we're going to hit a golf shot. We're loading as if we're going close to our backswing, and then we're jumping up and left. But remember that alignment rod's there. Our feet are not moving over the top of that alignment rod, so we're working away from where the golf ball would be. So this is where I think you can get the valuable feel of what the left leg should do and how it pushes you back and away from the ball.
Can you explain the, walk me through the left leg?
Yeah, so, well, just the whole thing, like if your pelvis moves toward the ball, the swing implications, your hands are gonna end up effectively be closer to you. And your body gets all jacked up. So you're going to have a couple different types of misses with your golf swing. Like you're going to hit the ball right or you could hit it left. So a lot of golfers miss both ways, and a lot of golfers, it's called early extension. Their hips move towards the ball, and this can happen either in your downswing or in your backswing. And we've probably heard this too, like keep your head on the ball, like you're lifting your head up. So we've all done straight leg RDLs, and we all know that when we put our butt back, our head moves down, and when we move our butt forward, your head goes up. The same thing happens with your golf swing in this position. So trying to get a golfer to move their hip left and back as they rotate is crucial because it prevents you from your hips moving forward and towards the ball. So we're trying to eliminate the most common swing characteristic out there, which is early extension. We're trying to eliminate it by retraining motor patterns in your left hip. And this isn't a movement that's uncommon. Like you see this in baseball, like the hips moving left and back all day long. So it's not a move that's new. It's just maybe I'm trying to attack it in a different angle. I don't know.
So we're trying to create basically frontal and transverse plane motion at the hips, because if I have too much sagittal plane motion, it's going to go into that early extension swing fault you just talked about, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So when I'm doing the jump,
two-legged jump. I load to the outside of the right knee. Okay. I'm jumping in the air. I'm going to turn 90 degrees.
Yep.
I'm making sure that I'm not coming forward. Yep. Right. We've got that alignment rod. Basically, like, imagine if there was a actual, like, golf tee, I shouldn't jump towards that.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Or
if there's a wall in front of you.
Perfect.
Jump in front of a wall, but jump away from the wall and turn.
So one thing I want to, what's the feel for my, how are you cueing guys for that left? So to me, it makes a lot of sense, and I feel like I understand the preload through the right glute and then that motion. But what's going on at the left hip there?
The left one is tricky. It's tricky because if you get up right now and stand on your left leg and rotate left and jump, what kind of pressure do you have to create? It's a weird feeling because you don't normally push yourself towards that side and jump.
I feel like kind of medial on my foot, like, yeah, to the inside.
Yeah, so your left knee's going to go into some, like, knee dive valgus position, and then it's going to, your leg is going to externally rotate, and it's going to push you back away from the ball. So I feel that this, I don't know specifically what muscles are going to provide this other than a lot of quad for knee extension there. But yeah, the feel is for you to push, like, at a 45 degree angle back away from your left foot. I don't know if that makes any sense, but maybe that's not the right angle.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, right? So yeah. Basically, like, if I'm in, like, a normal, like, golf or batting stance, what we're trying to do is as I'm jumping to create that motion of where my left foot's going to pull back, and it's not going to pull straight back. It's going to pull back
towards midline at a 45 degree angle ish.
Okay. And tie that to the pelvis in the golf swing for me. Make that connection of, because if I don't do that, if I don't pull back with that hip, now I'm in
your
early extension.
Yes. So your right hip is going to move forward and around the left hip if that left hip doesn't go back. And the way I like to visualize this, guys, if you want to give yourself a picture, put a piece of paper on the floor right under your legs. You can do this in a sitting position, and maybe draw a dot right in the middle of that piece of paper and turn the paper to the right and then turn it to the left. That's your pelvis. And in the golf swing, if you turn it to the right and then you leave that top part of the paper where it's at and then you turn it left again.
That's a money analogy.
You're going to see that paper move out towards the golf ball. And that's what you see all day long with people's pelvis. Like, it doesn't stay centered left and right. It's going to turn towards the ball. So maybe we even put a little video of
yeah,
that on here too.
But yeah. So when I have that early extension, or I have someone who's not really getting the right pressure through the left side, they're rotating around kind of a fixed left side. So that right side is going to rotate out and around. It brings it closer towards the ball. Early extension.
Yeah.
What we're trying to get is to create that spin in place type action, which is, I don't know, but I'm assuming, like, it probably is faster because you're closer to the axis of rotation. So that's probably why these guys are able to generate such good hip velocities. I bet it's also a lot more, like, efficient transfer of, like, the summation of forces. You're not, like, leaking energy in that sagittal plane is almost how I visualize it. So it's not spinning around a fixed left side. It's kind of that pushing and pulling almost. Like, I'm gonna take the plate and I'm gonna spin it with both hands versus just spinning one side out and around it.
Yeah. Another thing. A gear. One side spins one way, one goes the other way. If you took a top and you spun it on your table, what direction are your fingers going? They're not going the same direction, right? They're going opposite direction. That's the force that I'm trying to get my athletes to feel with their feet.
Okay. Yeah, like, yeah.
We're creating a top-type motion from the ground up because we're trying to create a, like, rotational, like, helix up the chain to get to their hips. So maybe that's another way you can think about this.
So let me ask you this. I don't know if we talked about this before, but like one of the things that's really big in the baseball community is people love to say that power is plane specific. So their response is to do skater hops or hide-ins. Basically, if you guys don't know what this is, a lateral bound. So I'm standing on my right leg and I'm jumping directly to the side to my left leg as far as I can. I've also seen some guys will like to do, they'll basically do the same thing, but they'll do a 90 degree turn. In both of these, the emphasis is on basically like distance covered and they're pushing out. What are your, because to me, like, and I've experienced this before, you can get to, basically guys are just pushing. They're trying to push with like hitters or throwers. They're trying to load that right side. We're assuming we're all right-handed. They're trying to load. So if I'm doing that lateral broad jump, they're trying to load and then they're just going to push and they're going to push out as far as they can to the left. What I'm hearing based on what, and I never thought about this before, but like based on what you're saying, and I think the mechanics are probably pretty similar. That's probably going to at best won't have very much transfer because it's not specific to the way the pelvis is producing the body. And I would argue it could probably even lead to poor, it could encourage effectively like early extension in a baseball swing. Something where they're not really rotating as much. It's more so just they're pushing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so if I was to prioritize that type of movement in my programming with a golfer, I would do it more so just to expose them to something new. And I wouldn't put it like super high up on my list.
It would be a general
thing
versus specific.
Because in golf, if your hips move laterally, left and right, you're kind of screwed. So I don't want to spend a lot of time teaching my players the feeling of their right foot pushing them so far left. Now, I think that it would provide a lot of stabilizing support on their left side, so it could be good, but I don't think that I just don't see it.
It wouldn't be useful, and tell me if you disagree with the statement I'm about to make. We're not saying that exercise is a bad exercise or it doesn't have a place, but in terms of a specific movement aimed at improving the direct pattern of rotary, like power production in a golf swing,
it's
not the same. So like, you could do it, and there might be value for it, and there might be a time and place to do it, but because I see in the baseball community, like, and I don't know, I'm just like kind of begging the question here. I see people all the time doing that exercise for the same, because they say that they're developing power in the frontal plane, which is how we do it in baseball. And I'm just kind of curious or wondering, like, if that has as much carryover as we think it does.
Yeah, and I don't think that I would use it like that. I think I would, in baseball, yes, you're moving forward, you're creating lateral to a vertical force, but I still feel that force, yeah, you have to be able to decelerate that lateral load, but are you going to be able to be faster if you're just in a more fixated position and travel up? Like, we look at Barry Bonds, like, the guy didn't move lateral a whole lot.
Yeah.
He just stayed in one place, but
especially for hitting, right? Because hitters aren't like, I could see where people make the argument with like a thrower that they're getting more push, but hitting is reactive, and you're not going to be like the number one like JV coach thing that they say is don't lunge, right? Like, don't lunge at the ball. So that makes a ton of sense to me, where you're not like, because that's an exercise I've used in the past for that. And I kind of just wonder, like, especially for hitters, how much how beneficial, like, I think we need to look further at the actual mechanics. I don't think just like doing a lateral bound because it's frontal plane, or a rotational bound because it's transverse plane, I don't think that's like specific enough to really influence like the pelvis as it works in a swing. And I don't know, like, I'm sure you haven't studied as much as the golf swing, obviously, but to me, like, for a hitter, once their front foot is down, a lot of the similar things are happening to a golf swing in my mind.
I mean, and a lot of golf coaches right now, some of the best coaches are teaching golf in the light of a baseball swing. Like, it's identical. Really, the only thing it's really not even that much different.
Yeah.
You're just holding on to a longer club, and your feet aren't moving laterally.
So do you think, would you make the jump to say that using some of these like rotational, like the rotational vertical jump that we talked through just now. You think there'd be value for that for a hitter?
Yes, I do. And a pitcher. I just think, any type of rotational athlete, if you're using the ground, which we all are, I think exposing yourself to these type of jumps will be different for you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, guys, I know we're kind of running a little bit short on time. Liam, was there anything you wanted to jump in with?
Yeah, just real quick. So you're doing these you're exposing these athletes to these movements, and I'm assuming so the whole goal is we're improving your club head speed.
Hip rotational speeds, is my goal, yeah.
Okay. So but. So getting these athletes moving like this, you're able to measure like, okay, this is improving.
Surely just by club head speed. I wish I had 3D ability to see pelvis rotation, but I don't. I don't right now. That exists, but I don't have it. We would combine these type of programs with like speed stick training, which is a neuromuscular thing that works very, very well. We combine this with like med ball type explosive training, but really the only thing that I have to measure right now is club head speed.
Gosh. Which I think is awesome because that's a transfer, right? Like at the end of the day, if the pelvis is rotating faster, but there's no change in their output, that's what we care about. So
yeah,
just to like break it down, what we talked about there, like we're using these drills. Zach's saying his intent behind them is to improve the speed of rotation at the pelvis. That typically leads, and what he sees in his athletes leads to an increase in club head speed, right? They're gonna hit the ball further, blah blah blah. All this good stuff's gonna happen.
Yeah, and you gotta keep in mind these are pros, so their skill level is really, really high. So adding a little bit of speed with their pelvis, they should be able to adapt to it. But if your pro is not ready to adapt to that, just be careful, because it could make their swing worse, or their coach isn't explaining or talking about this kind of stuff. It could lead to some worse golf, so you just got to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything we didn't get into, Zach, that you really wanted to touch on? I know, like, obviously this is a tough topic to talk about just like without having you. This is something, guys, you really gotta see it and feel it, I think, to experience. And like I said, we'll try to get some videos up. It's definitely something that I wanna dive further into in the future, and maybe create some resources for you guys to be able to do this, because I think the assessment of closed chain pelvis function and relating that to the patterns you see in rotary sports, I really feel like that's something that Zach has kind of innovated and isn't really being done, at least not with people that I'm familiar with. And I think it has tremendous like application outside of golf too. Like obviously selfishly, I'm super interested in baseball, but I think there's a ton of value and a ton of applicability there for sure. So cool. Liam, anything else?
No, just another awesome podcast, man. We gotta have Goo back on.
Goo, thanks for coming on, man. This was awesome. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it, got a lot out of it. Definitely going to have to be a second parter to this for sure.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Cheers.